Trying looking for Alex Simmons.
And you have found him. Yes, I've answered my own phone, so to speak. How are you, brother?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It is a lovely, lovely sunny day.
It is a gorgeous day.
Yeah, the birds are singing and the wind's blowing and the sun is shining.
Well, that's a good triple play right there.
You know, before we get into the topics that we've chosen to talk about today, I have to chastise myself here. I have to. Because this is the month of June, and there's something that happened in the month of May that I did not mention that I about very badly.
What was that about?
It was that one of the founding fathers of Tell the Damn Story, Mr. Your friend and mine, Tim Fielder, at the East Coast Black Age of Comics convention in Philadelphia, around the 21st, I believe it was, of May, received at the Glyph Awards three awards. Three. Not one, not two, but three awards. The first one was for Best Comic Cover for his Maddie's Rocket book one. The second was for, I'm holding it up here, Story of the Year, Maddie's Rocket book one. And the third was for Best Female Character, Maddie's Rocket, book one.
Well, the Maddie part.
Well, the Maddie,
Rocket
is, Maddie is.
Unless the Rocket is sentient and a female.
Yep.
So how about that triple play? Speaking of triple plays for
Tim Fielder. Let's hear it for the man.
Congratulations. He's, as you know and I know, he is a man on a mission. You know, it's one of the reasons we connected so well is there's a drive there to tell stories.
Yeah.
One of the things that should be noted about Mr. Fielder there is that not only does he want to tell stories, but he's always searching for a new way to tell a story, a better way to tell a story, a way that mixes various visual passions he has. So not only is he, you know, winning awards and getting noticed for the good work
and doing a TED Talk X, TEDx rather, talk.
But, you know, he's also moving the art form forward, which is something that we should, you know, make note of and congratulate. Yeah,
absolutely. And we got to, you know, again, he's always with us in spirit, but he is running around even more than I am. And so we only get him now and then for these things. But, you know, like he said, he's always with us and we get comments from him and things like that. And that's great. And we'll have him back here.
Did he do his TED Talk
yet? He's done a TEDx talk. Yes, absolutely. I don't know if it's still on YouTube, was it? But I saw it some months back. I'll try and look.
You could probably Google. I know there's a couple of different tiers of TED Talk. One of my former students, who is now a teacher going for his PhD, did a TED Talk in which he mentioned me, and it's you can Google it, you know. Or search, I guess you could search through TED Talk as well, but it's findable. So we would suggest that everybody go and Google Tim
Fielder
TED Talk. Fielder, excuse me. Tim Fielder TED Talk and take that journey.
Right. Now, Chris, let me just ask you, are you on speaker?
I am on.
Okay. For some
reason,
I don't
know how else to do it. This is the way. This
as loud as you normally do, so the volume seems lower. I don't know if you're not as close to the mic or what, but I think it's
an energy thing.
No, not that.
How's this? I'll speak a little louder. How's
Well, I would
that?
say get closer to the mic if you can, because I want to make sure we don't miss anything.
Well, I
Okay.
will.
And it's funny because you were just talking about Tim, and you're talking about man on a mission. I always call myself man on the move. He's man on a mission. We have to come up with one for you. But I think that in its own way, that is a sort of a nifty, sneaky, not that you meant it that way, segue into the topic of today, which, if you don't mind, I'll do the little intro here, which is that as much as Chris and Tim and Jamal and Scott and Diana and all these artists that I've worked with or had the pleasure of, have the pleasure of knowing over the years, we've all, really put forth an effort to do our best work, to be professional, to deliver when we say we're going to turn out quality material, which doesn't mean we always hit the mark. Doesn't mean that every adventure, creative adventure, is a successful one or a joyous one. And I find that, especially when people are starting out or trying to, keep up the momentum, keep up the enthusiasm as they're trying to build their rep, you get hit with a few blows now and then, or you mess up, and it takes you down a number of pegs, sometimes more pegs than it should. So I thought what might be useful today is for you and I to talk a bit about some of our, what I call toughest writer's tales. What were some of the walls we ran into, or what happens when it all just sort of collapsed, fell apart, burned out, or didn't work, and how did we handle that?
Going first, or am I going first?
Oh, I think you should go first. Did I lose you?
No, I'm here. You hear me?
No, I mean, really, it sounds like you're across the room.
I'm about an inch away from the phone.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep going. But there we go. Okay. So yes.
I don't know about projects that got away from me. I know ones that have taken longer, and that I've had a rewrite. I think one of the things that I come across when I'm having trouble writing, the answer for me is always, well, how well do you know the characters? And almost without exception, I find that the problem in the piece is because I haven't made a decision about what the character would organically do. How would that character work in that story? For example, I'm way beyond a deadline with a blackjack story, and this one comes down to one question, just one simple question, and I keep going back and forth. Does he take his guns with him or not? And I now have a very clear picture of how the story works out with and without the guns. And I just have to make that decision as to which serves the story best, and then once I find that I have that, then that goes. So I think one of the things is knowing your characters and knowing what decisions they'll make. I'll tell you one other story. I have a book called The North, and it's based on actual events from my childhood. But it deals with racism and loyalties and the difficulty of doing the right thing. And one reason I haven't written it yet is the villain of the piece is still alive.
Ah.
And I do not know yet how to fictionalize them enough to still serve the story and not create bad blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have a couple other projects before I have to make that decision. But so, again, it's for me, it's decision making. You know, once you make your decisions, then you can go. I know that I have a really good story that is out right now, and the world doesn't want to hear it right now, at least not the way I'm presenting it. You know, America is very very divided. I think there's actually I think there's numerous divisions, but major ones where the one side will not listen to the other side, and you know, the blame will be depending on where you're standing. It's the other side's fault, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is about that. And this book takes a look at, you know, if our present, right, is the future's past, right? So if past is prologue, where the hell are we going? You know, and it looks at if we continue down the road we're going now, what kind of America will we have? And the way it's been presented, you know, with a fist in the air and kind of a red, white, and blue fog on the cover, and a title called A Simple Rebellion has not been embraced. It's got about 4 or 5 really strong reviews on Amazon, and it's sold maybe a quarter of what I was hoping. But my marketing of it has been received with the most violence I've ever received.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, reply. I'll put something out on as innocuous a platform as Instagram. You know, and the response that will come back is, "You should just die." And I've been called communist and fag. I haven't been called fag since the 70s in the Bronx, you know, because, you know, I wouldn't smoke cigarettes. Ah, come on, you fag, you know, that kind of stuff. So it just, I find it bizarre, and I continually market away from the people that I think would hate the book. And yet somehow the trolls find it, which is, you know, it's a fascinating learning experience. But as I watch new headlines and new crises and new horrible things going on, they're reflected in the book that's already out there. And it's frustrating. I guess that would be my biggest thing, is that I have a book that would be a bomb for a lot of people, B-A-L-M, and would potentially inspire some conversations that America needs to have, and I can't get it past the hate keepers. And that's, you know, it's so frustrating that I've thought of renaming it. I've thought of remarketing it, because it's you know, the hero is a beloved aging comedian, and there is a lot of humor through it. It just gets darker and darker and darker. You know, one way you can look at this book is that, you know, it's the end of humor in America. It's the end of the sun in America, the happy times, or if we continue to be at each other's throat. But I don't know that that's going to fare any better, you know. It's interesting. So wow. those are my responses. I don't know what you think about that, but
well, I mean, for one, obviously, as your friend, you know, I feel badly about what you've encountered. I wish I could say I was surprised that that stuff is out there and unfortunately washing up on your shore.
Yeah.
I I would say the surprise I do feel is that there had not been or has not been more receiving of the book, even though this other stuff was happening.
Well, as recently as last weekend, you know, and I hope this doesn't create a problem at all. I'm not going to name any names, but I was at a writer's convention and spoke with an agent. And I showed him everything that I did. You know, my whole point was, look, I have, you know, I'm misinformed or not. I was told I had to create a platform and create a body of work. I have. Here it is. And I showed him what the cop books were and what the Genius High was about. And I showed him what I've done with your Blackjack character. And then I, you know, I even told him the most current one, Simple Rebellion. And thank the gods that he was interested in anything. But he went back one. He kind of gave me a nod about Simple Rebellion. And so that's a hot topic right now. This one over here I'm interested in. You know, so, okay, you can see anything you're interested in, and hopefully something good comes from that. But it was interesting to see, you know, yep, not going to touch it. And yeah. I understand 100%, you know. But I look, and, you know, I listen to podcasts, as we both do. I watch the news. There are entire stations that you would think would read the book, podcasts that you think would embrace the book. But, you know, again, it goes to that question that I've been going through about, you know, is there a limit to the positivity, to the good that independent or self-publishing, they keep pushing it as self-publishing. Independent publishing is if someone else publishes you with a small company. Self-publishing is if you publish yourself. That still has a taint to it that makes people resistant to read it. Someone else has to have said your stuff is good enough to publish before people will take it seriously. And I've spent 10 years really working hard to put out good, solid product. And it may not be enough. You know, and it's something that you have to, in a very sober mind, without bitterness, without rationalization, you have to look at that and say, okay, you know, you clearly, you do it, I do it. We clearly live our lives to communicate story.
I find that
if we're doing good work and it's not getting out, you know.
I find it interesting because, you know, I think, no, I won't speak for you. I'll speak for myself. I think that I resist at times certain rules of thumb that are embraced by a portion of the masses, which is, you know, you cater to the lowest common denominator. So, In other words, I don't like to feel that that's what the masses, meaning all people, want. I like to feel that there are segments of the masses that will say, yeah, throw something at me that's on this, you know, this first floor level, and I'll eat it up every day. I got to go up two or three levels. It's not happening. I understand that. That's just life. That's life. But I know that, you know, if I hear you were talking about Simple Rebellion and sort of the political, social, racial tensions and series of events and comments and things that are going on right now, I'll talk about, you know, even Blackjack. I, for years, would hear African-Americans talking about wanting more characters that represented us, that spoke of what we had done and so forth and so on. At the same time, we're going to the movies, we're buying books that have action and superheroes and exploration and all that other stuff. So for me, filtering through my life experiences and through the books that I loved and everything, eventually came Blackjack. And what was interesting was the first couple of waves. The first waves of attention were, it's a black lead character, it's a period piece, nobody's going to be interested. The second wave was, it's a black character, it's a period piece, well, black people will be interested, but no whites. And the third wave was, it doesn't have superpowers and things like that, so the comic book industry is not going to deal with this. You know, maybe the adults might kind of sort of look at it. Well, the book started coming out, and I got segments of all of those arenas that they told me we wouldn't get, including European interest. Now, the book never blew up to gazillions of copies. the way certain books did that had, you know, a lot of TNA and, you know, a lot of gadgets and things like that. But it developed a following, and I'm gonna call it a dedicated following that even during a couple of the periods of time when I was not publishing any of the stories, I couldn't go to a convention, walk the aisles, and not have people stop me and ask me about the book. Or when are you doing the next one? Or I love that story that you did with such and when he was in China, when he was in Japan, when he was this, when that. You know, it's like, whoa, some people even telling me how much it meant to them. So I think you and I both have encountered the realities that marketing is a beast all by itself.
Yeah.
Reading your audience is another head on the Hydra. Finding your niche and reading the audience and getting that material out there. All of these are beasts we have to deal with. And in the terrible tales that writers must tell, meaning our experiences, not necessarily the stories we're making up, that's one of the ones that we need to talk about more, because whether it's independent, small press, self-published, or even the majors, and I've got adventures in all of those, if you don't have the machine put together, your machine or their machine working for you, you could have written the most brilliant piece of work ever.
Mm-hmm.
And folks won't find it. It will not be heard through the rest of the noise. So what you're talking about on a personal level for me is frustrating. And I'm sitting here at the back of my head thinking, you and I on separate conversation need to put our heads together with a couple of other people and really look at this. But, you know, right now I'm going to say that the backlash, yeah, well, you know, we knew the job was dangerous when you took it. But yeah, in terms of getting the people who would be behind this sort of thing to raise their hands, step up, stand up, whatever, that's the next battle. That's the ongoing battle for you / us, you know. And I, you know, I'm in the trenches with you. And like I said, we will talk about this.
I think it would be a different thing if we were getting purely negative reviews on our work.
On the stuff you do,
because you have a whole range of stuff you do, from you know, things that you've done that has had legs despite what the company has, you know, like Orpheus of Batman is still mentioned once in a while, even though he was killed off years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff you've done with Scooby-Doo, the stuff you've done with Archie, and of course your Blackjack characters and the Kids Comic-Con and all that stuff. You have gotten again and again and again, hey, that works for me. Hey, that works for me. You have even gotten, and I remember, I was so grateful for you doing this. You videotaped a kid one time who came up to you to talk about a Blackjack story that I had written. And you said,
yeah.
And hit the video and all that stuff. And it was, you know, it's those little moments that keep you going, you know. I've gotten, on each of the things that I've put out, I've gotten 4.5 to 5 stars. You know that there is at least some quality there. Would an editor say, listen, we need to do this and this? Okay, maybe, sure. Would I say yes? I'd say hell yes. You know, but I know that the guts of it is there, and the ideas have merit and are getting across to, you know, that small audience.
Well, the other thing we look at too is, you just said editor, would an editor, well, you're not the person who puts out a book without anybody else reading it.
Oh, true.
You have editors working on your material.
I have the 3 to 5 people read and edit and kick my ass before I put anything out. Yes, and I think that's one of the reasons I pitched the way I did last weekend. You know, because I know that I've put out a professional product. I crossed the line by taking out from my bag, here's a copy of the things that you know that you were interested in. Look, it's a professional product. And the guy picked it up. He had the Genius Eye in his hands and flipped through it. He says, this looks really good.
Well, and, see, but that's the thing. You know, you're in that position as a marketer at that moment. You're the agent. You're really the PR department. And one of the stigmas that self-publishers or indies have to get past is something looking like it's a quality product, that it doesn't look like you stapled it together in your garage, you know, that you drew the cover yourself and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's a kind of thing where we have to show that we understand what professionalism looks like, that that's what we strive for, you know, that it means something to us. It's not just what they used to call vanity press. I just want to see my words, you know, on paper somewhere in somebody's hands. So yeah, no, I'm sure you, as you said, you crossed the line. Okay, maybe you did, but I'm sure it was necessary in order
sometimes
prove the point.
To do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me just, you know, again, we will talk more about this, and I think even in a separate episode, marketing is something that we want to talk about.
We want to get back to the original question, and I do have an answer of writing blunder. Sex scenes. Sex scenes are just horrendous to write. You know, because if you write it with graphic words, it sounds like, you know, porn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you write it purely on romantic terms, it sounds like a romance novel. And if you're a genre writing, there's no knock on either of them. I know, you know, porn writers, I know romance writers, God bless them. They work hard. You got your audience and do what you do. But if that's not the feel that you're going for,
no pun intended.
Thank you very much. Then you have to find a middle, you know, a middle ground somewhere. There's no way I'm going to be able to get through this without you laughing. So, and here's another pun you're going to, you know, my solution is,
okay,
what a guy, is to begin the scene, you know, once they get in a brace or fall onto the bed or whatever, the scene fades out. We don't see the rest of it. We leave it. Yeah, we leave it to the reader's imagination at that point. But I have that has been something that, you know, because readers expect, they expect something, you know. But I just, you know, I can't see myself. And then he grabbed her ass, and it's just not what I think of as part of the story I'm telling.
I don't I don't think I'm trying to whiz back through all of my various writing projects. I don't think I've ever really written a full out sexual encounter. You know, I've written, like you said, some of the things that led up to the beginnings of the first touch, whatever. But one thought that went through my mind as you were saying this is, okay, Alex, if you did, how would you? And I think it would depend for me, and this even jumps back to something you said at the very beginning about character. It's the voice of the character that would determine how I handled the tone of that moment. I think, like you said, he grabbed her ass. I think if I were dealing with some sort of a base character or a guy who's that's how he talks, that's his thing, I think I would be tempted to maybe make some of those remarks or give some of that description through dialogue coming through the character, because then it would feel, here's one for you, organic. You know, feel like that's me legitimately using language or terms or describing something that I ordinarily would not.
Right.
You know, so I think maybe that would be my trick.
Mm-hmm.
For me to explore to see if I could do that, but I'm a little bit more like you in terms of at least a lot of the material. I mean, I'm not talking about the kid stuff, obviously. I don't go there with that. But like with Blackjack, I've never
Veronica grabbed Archie's ass. No,
well, she's probably done that a few times. But you know, I would never. I haven't done that with Blackjack where there's been that kind of an encounter, and I've not seen a reason to, you know. But that's me. And that's me as a creator. I get to make those decisions. But the it's a challenge. You're right. It is a challenge. And some of it is about who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because ultimately we come from ourselves when we start doing this material. And when I talk to my students, you know, one of the things I talk about when we're talking about developing a character, when we're talking about dialogue, when we're talking about character bios, all those things, I talk about it, you know, if you just write as if it's you, then all your characters sound alike. All your characters move pretty much the way you move. Their yeah. attitudes are pretty much yours. And you have no levels, no dimension. You have one-dimensional people running around on the pages. But if you start to allow yourself to get into the mindset of that type of person, someone maybe you know or you've seen or whatever, and then begin to develop your fictional character around those kinds of traits and personality quirks, then yes, their language, their spoken language, their body language, all of these things begin to develop into a cohesive individual. And you can write scenes with these characters, and it's not you. So, you know, if I write a violent scene in Blackjack and then I write something silly in Scooby-Doo, well, you know, there's bits of me in there, but no, this is appropriate for this genre and this is appropriate for this one.
Well, I agree with you. And you know what? I can talk to you about exactly this challenge with an added obstacle that I just recently did. I have recently joined Mystery Writers of America, and they had a call for submissions that I thought I wanted to, yeah, I actually did want to face this challenge and give it a shot, and we'll see where it goes. And much to my surprise, you know, the conceit is somewhere in the story. It's kind of a YA story, but somewhere in the story, the character will meet or see or witness my first murder. Mm. That was the conceit, right? So I did one for my young character, Margaret Agnes Ferguson. I wrote the whole story. And then I went back getting ready to submit it, and I noticed that they're actually looking for something darker. It's like, okay, it's a writing exercise. I'm going to do another story. Just let's go ahead. And I spent some time trying to figure out what character would be appropriate. And a character who actually appears in Genius High kept coming up to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Stevie. She's transgender. And, you know, she's been harassed and bullied and abused by people who cannot handle that she is, you know, and what she is. So I decided to do the story of her first romance, and at the same time tell, you know, the reaction of the worst aspects of the world to that first romance. I understood how the end story and those parts, those moments, which were going to be separated across the story, I understood how that goes. But I really had to research, or really had to figure out and have a lot of conversations with Tina, the romance part. And, you know, not being transgender and not being a high school student, you know, I said, well, how can I get insight into this? What research can I do? Well, I'm a high school teacher, right? I'm not a high school student, but I'm a high school teacher. So I watched the hallways and I saw how, you know, people are coupling off, you know, hand holding, or maybe they're not up to the hand holding part, but they'll walk a little closer to each other, you know, and they'll walk each other to class. And
mm-hmm.
and I had to use that. And the decision was make it her first romance. You know, and the idea is to treat her equally. That's what I want people to see. So this is her first romance, not her first romance as a trans, or, you know, that her first romance. And that opened the doors for me. And if I just wrote the scenes that I thought were needed in there as a high school couple, you know, stumbling and bumbling and nervously reaching out for each other's hand or whatever and having those conversations. And, you know, the added thing, of course, is being seen in public and being, you know, there are a group that do not approve of them. And, you know, that's where
the conflict comes. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, it's that when you make the decision, that's when the parts come together. And the decision was to serve the story as, you know, as a romance, not as, you know, translit. Now, there might be a trans reader somewhere who reads that story and says, well, you got this wrong, that wrong, the other thing. And I'm willing to take that hit. But I treated them as
human beings.
Yeah, young human being couple that are discovering love. What the world does about that, that's, you know, that's another part of that experience.
Exactly, exactly.
You know? But I guess that's, you know, I keep coming back to that same thing, you know, serve the story, serve the story, even when you hit these big challenges.
Okay, and on that note, he has served the story and therefore told his damn story. next episode will be a continuation of this one, and then I'll drop, you know, my blunder onto the table and we'll examine that. So you going to be back for that, Chris?
I'm here for every episode you want me to be here.
Good, because otherwise I'll be talking to myself. Okay, take care, buddy. I'll be talking to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye. Oh, and...
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.